This is Beyond a Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a church, get on a mandate. Get it on and welcome to the best 15 minutes or so in the universe of Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Got Mark Hard Out Soft Taco Garagus over there, and he's got all the stories in his head.
We got stories, but the big one I'll save till Friday. Today, you know, as Gary mentioned, there's so many legal stories going on. But I just have one question that hopefully won't take up, because you and I could talk about this for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But you had sent me something the other day on auctions, car auctions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at it. And then it got me, you know how you look at one car auction.
Yeah.
I went to another one that just happened in Arizona. What has happened with Porsche? Porsche prices and Ferrari prices, more so than Lambos or the others, are through the roof like nothing I've ever seen. I mean, I saw $1 million, $1.6 million. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, you know, cars sort of have their you know, the peaks and valleys and trends, and, you know, there's some cars that are surprising where you go, that car should be worth more, and then you go, why is that car selling for so much? It doesn't always make sense.
It doesn't make sense. I saw a Shelby, which I would have thought would have been through the roof. It was not that much more than it was, you know, 5 years ago.
It's not like houses.
No.
Where you know, okay, that, and there's no $7 million houses that get out for 1.6 and vice versa. It's what it is at the time. Cars, they move around a lot.
It's unbelievable how they move around. And I can't, all of a sudden, I remember when the Ferraris did this. I wonder, maybe I'll have somebody do an economic tie-in here. I remember when Ferraris skyrocketed. There was a guy who had a Daytona that at one point was worth more than his house in La Cañada.
Yeah. Well, speaking of houses in La Cañada, one of the cars that went off over the weekend that you were looking at in Scottsdale is, I always loved Lamborghini Miuras.
Right.
And I had three of them at some point. I had to sell them to get the Porsche and to get my house in La Cañada. And the last one I sold was an SV, a 71 Lamborghini SV, which was one of the nicest SV Miuras.
Yeah. I saw this price. Let me see if I can remember correctly.
Yes.
1.6?
3.5 and change.
Wow.
Dang. Now, I bought the car for $2 million. I sold it for $2 million after putting a bunch into it. And I've always been like, that is going to be a $5 million car one day. But I had to sell it to get a down payment for a house. I had to sell it, and I lost on it, and blah, blah, blah. But I went that, and I know it was 4 years ago. So it went from $2 million.
I remember the car. You got rid of that, the Islero, and one other, right?
Yeah, it actually went from 2.2 to almost 3.6 in 4 years, and then they're just going to keep going. So no matter what, you're always going to have stories about once
the
you
one
did
that
good
got
on,
away.
But there will be the one that got away, and that's the Miura SV.
Wow. Well, speaking of cases that begin with an M, Gary, Murdaugh. This is quite a case. It has really taken on a life of its own, not the least of which, I think when you've got drugs, murder, embezzlement, finances, a powerful people or a powerful family. I mean, for those who aren't in the weeds, Murdaugh's family basically kind of owned this low country for three generations. And I think, though, that the one thing that captures imagination is when it's a circumstantial evidence case.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got everybody out there trying to be Inspector Clouseau or, you know, and putting it together, a murder she wrote. And do you have this tape? Because this caused a lot of consternation and controversy. Here it is. This is yesterday's testimony, and this is supposedly a statement that Murdaugh, who, if you're watching on YouTube, he's in the middle, in the upper right-hand corner. He's sandwiched between his lawyers. Dick Harpootlian is on the right. And this guy is testifying as to what Murdaugh said on tape. And I don't know if it was a body cam, they definitely recorded it.
Yeah, it was a recording in the interview in the aftermath, right after.
So he's just discovered presumably his wife and his son being slaughtered.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he says.
It was just so bad. I did it so bad.
When you asked the defendant about the traumatic picture that he saw of Paul and Maggie, what did he say?
It's just so bad. I did him so bad.
I did him so bad.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now, I don't want to ask this as a leading question. In fact, I won't. I'll wait. What's your reaction to that?
That's him. It's him speaking of his slain son.
Of his slain son, exactly. Presumably, yes.
If I was defending him, I'd say that was a father who never had the kind of relationship that he wanted with his son. And he did him wrong. He didn't go to some Little League games. He didn't like his first girlfriend. And now he's discovered him dead. And I'm guilt-ridden for not being more present in my son's life.
Okay. I was on TV last night. They played that. And I said, I can think of 10 different reasons.
Yes.
But most of all, because he's so upset that he either didn't protect him or didn't do enough.
Right.
Which is my reaction as a father. I wasn't even, you know, I guess I always think as a lawyer, a defense lawyer, but this has been spun as a confession. Which,
yeah, no. No, because, well, first off, when you're in anguish, your words aren't as carefully chosen,
right.
Number one.
And that doesn't mean that it's necessarily a Freudian slip. It's because what's going through your head. You know, if I can think of another example factually. If, for instance, he knew that he was embezzling and that there was a relationship between his embezzlement or his cover-up, if you will, of the kid's boat accident where somebody was killed, and he felt like he had guilt over that.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is exactly the way you would react.
Yes.
I did him so wrong.
Right.
I didn't protect him.
Either way, it shouldn't move the needle one way or another. It could be an anguished father lamenting the life he had with his kid. Is the presumption that he hired a hitman or that he did it himself?
No, they're saying he did it himself.
I don't even think that's a proper answer of I did him so bad. I don't feel like that's a proper vernacular for killing somebody. I wouldn't state it that way if I was guilt-racked over killing my son.
I couldn't agree more, and I think the people who don't understand that I think have never seen up close. I mean, I've told you for years, the toughest cases I have to deal with are parents who've lost their child. I don't know how they get up in the morning. I really don't. I mean, to me, it's unfathomable. And I never know. And I always feel like I don't know. I feel so dirty to have to sit and mediate those cases and have to put a value on it or say your kid was worth this much, you know, or the kid is not worth that much.
Right.
But it's such an anguished thing that the idea that you're going to say that is a confession. You saw the little cry on, right?
Right.
On the tape. Did he confess to the murder?
No. I mean, that's not enough to hang your hat on if I'm a juror.
Yeah. Gary, what do you think as a father, now a father?
I can't imagine what I would say. I'm sure I would say nonsense in the moments following something like that, even the days following something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So there's the Baldwin situation.
Right.
Early money. Garagos. Do not do an interview.
Boy, do not do an interview. And boy, the fact that he didn't see coming, the fact they were going to use the producer angle as a prosecutorial theory to drive a truck through all of this into that trial of his to get in. He was cheap. He was cutting costs. He hired the cheap female, rookie, inexperienced, to save money, blah, blah, blah. The fact that he didn't have that calculation when he was out there talking, he's got to, in his heart of hearts, say, why did I ever do that interview with George Stephanopoulos?
Well, presumably his lawyer said no interviews, right?
Yeah.
And he just overrode him.
And he overrode him. He's got a great lawyer. I mean, you know, by all accounts, I don't know him, but he's at a great firm. And you would expect that he would have said, do not do that. You would have expected that maybe other people around him are saying, you're getting killed. You got to do something. You got, you know, I can't tell you. In fact, we'll talk about it on Friday, but there are cases where I spend most of my time just yelling or getting firm or just, you know, putting my foot down. The people around the 5 and 10% crowd, no, you can't do that. Stop it. It's such a short money proposition to do it now just so that the person, your meal ticket feels good when down the road they're going to come back and say, why the fuck did you let me do that?
Right. So big mistake, and many facets and aspects of that sit down with Stephanopoulos is what they're coming back with.
They're coming, not only coming back with, they're leading with the, I didn't pull the trigger.
Right.
I mean, that even Stephanopoulos sat there in the interview and said, you didn't pull the trigger. I mean, you know, it's just like, okay, if that's going to be your defense, fine, but why do you tell it in advance so that they can hire experts, not only the prosecution, but the people who are suing you?
The document, the 13-page charging document, is an interesting read if you're in the weed on stuff like this, like we are. My favorite is a paragraph where they highlight during one of his media interviews where he describes himself as a weapons expert. And they, I mean, it's just like you can hear the hammer falling when they put expert in quotes in the middle of this paragraph. And it's just like, oh, yeah, you went out and said that publicly, and now we're going to hammer you with it.
And that's what I always
Baldwin
tell
said
the
he
clients.
Was an expert?
Yep. According to the charging documents.
Wow.
Yes, he referred to himself as a weapons, quote, expert.
And by the way, what are they doing? And I can't, once again, how many times I've sat in a courtroom and watched my client testify? Not because I called him, but because the prosecution's putting on their interview
right,
in front of the
right.
jury.
Right. Yeah, I was watching a tape from 6 months earlier.
Yeah.
Interesting case, a couple, the Masterpiece Cake Baking Shop.
I was going to ask you, what do you think? Because that's headed for the U.S. Supreme Court.
I am so tired of, well, there's a couple, there's a couple things. This guy has a religion. He sticks to it. He bakes his cakes. That's what he does. If you don't like it, go across the street. That's my new world order. Then you can go. Well, then he's allowed to not bake cakes for gay couples? Yes, he is. And then organize a boycott then. Not everything needs to be settled in a courtroom. And you're not allowed to nuisance a guy's life to death. This guy's a fucking taxpayer. He runs a business. He baked me a cake when I was in Colorado. Yes.
You never struck me as a cake eater.
Well, you bring me by a world-class lemon cake, and I will eat it.
You and Jake.
Like you
eating
pretzel sticks in Miami.
Right. Yeah, Jake is a big lemon cake guy,
too. It's the best.
Yeah.
Very moist. Anyway.
Why? What is it with the lemon cake? Because Jake is fixated on it
also. It's moister than regular chocolate cake. I don't know what it is. It's closer to a pie than it is a cake.
Right,
and I like pies better than cake.
So do I. I mean, pies, when I was growing up, I used to tell my mom, I don't want a birthday cake.
I want a birthday
pie. Yeah.
Right. So this guy is religious. Okay, first things first. What if he was Muslim? Would DOJ and everyone be getting all fired up, and all you fucking Karens out there, would you dare to go in there and say, you know, I want a transition cake with a picture of Muhammad on it? Would that fly? Would you be up his ass if he wasn't a white Christian guy? Because there's a thing going on in this country which is sort of neither here nor there for everything, but very focused on the white Christian guys as if they're the problem. I'm an atheist. I don't care. But the guy bakes cakes. He's religious. Let him run his fucking business the way he wants to.
What? But from my standpoint, I'm the cynic because it's probably the absolute wrong time to keep running test cases up to this particular Supreme Court with the defendants who are getting their ox cord, who are white Christians, because never has there been a Supreme Court that carries the water for religious exemptions like this Supreme Court does.
Yeah, they just threw one out of Pennsylvania or wherever the guy was the protester at the abortion clinic. And, I think the city dropped the charges, but the fucking feds had to show up at his house with guns drawn and a SWAT team. Like, there's a real weaponization of the DOJ and government intrusion, and I'm tired of all of it. Just spread it
out. You know, and by the way, it's interesting because you can point to both sides on this. It really is a great point to make, whether you're left, right, or in between. It happens in both directions. Mm-hmm. And people who don't understand that, I think, are somewhat naive. Unless you're cheering for, you know, I go back to your example. I've used it a million times. That unless, if this were football teams, you'd be exposed a lot quicker.
Yes. So, Masterpiece Cake Bake, let him bake his cake. If you don't like it, go across the street. If you're really animated about it, then get all your gay friends and all the friends that have teens that are transitioning and organize some sort of sit-in or something. But like, we don't need the Supreme Court to waste their time on this shit. And in general, I just want less government. I want less government telling businesses what they can do, because this is not that far from Tin Horn Flats.
It isn't. You're on the same continuum.
This is the government has now walked on to your business and started dictating to you what you can do and can't do in your own business. And that's fine with mayonnaise that's too warm and food poisoning. But you must draw the line at some point. And if a guy's deeply religious and he doesn't want to make a transition cake, then so be it.
And by the way, there are cases that I would like to see the U.S. Supreme Court take that are deal with qualified immunity, deal with issues that are lingering around that were judicially created as opposed to deciding cakes.
Absolutely. Right? The Pelosi video.
Okay, the Pelosi video is another one. Much to a lot of my friends, although it's funny, I have a set of friends who claim to be very liberal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing to me how when I'm on Fox, they're all watching because they comment immediately.
Interesting.
Very interesting. So
This is like the religious guy who's walking down the sidewalk and high fives Ron Jeremy when he comes by and then looks at you and goes, I don't watch any porn.
So I think it was Hannity, and it was the night before. Cause as you know, I had some information about this and I won't get into it because it'll identify who it is, but I knew it was going, in my opinion, it was going to be the way it was described to me. It would ask more questions than it answered.
Mm-hmm.
I said that to Hannity. A lot of people agreed, but there were the people who said that this doesn't ask more questions than it answered. And what's your reaction to that?
My reaction is this was sort of as advertised, as far as I could tell.
With the exception of holding the drink in one hand and the... Did you really expect... By the way, he's snoring as loud as I do when I'm out once he gets conked, poor guy. But were you expecting this?
No. So what they did is they created a lot of controversy by not wanting to share this with the public. And anytime, you know, it's my what's in the trunk. You know, sir, I pulled you over. Could you pop the trunk? No, I cannot. Well, okay, now I really want to know what's going on in the trunk. This is me arguing and telling him, you know, you got to get a warrant if you want to look at my trunk. And at some point, we pop the trunk, and there's a Space Saver spare there and a bottle of Gatorade. You know, it's like post-COVID, everything is on the table in terms of conspiracy theories, right. Everything. Wuhan, Fauci, Rochelle Walensky, FDA, like everything, all of it, all the time. Now everyone goes, I don't believe it till I see it or hear it. So when they said that we won't share the footage, then many people got suspicious. But the 911 call and the incident sort of comport with a crazy person and a guy trying to talk him down and lower the temperature.
Absolutely. And what I don't understand is, why did the NBC News reporter, who I think fairly accurately reported on this, right?
Yes.
Why did he get fired, or why did they retract the story?
I don't know. And so now the question is, do we need to take two laps around Conspiracy Park? Because I was mid-carriage ride around Conspiracy Park because they fired the reporter.
Right.
They said, we're locking off the body cam and no 911 calls. And I got into the carriage.
Right.
And I said, well, there's something they don't want us to see that doesn't comport with the... You know, there's also the part of it where it's extreme MAGA right-wing guy breaks nutty hippie fucking loser guy. But all right.
He was fucking this guy has about as much mental challenges as Dr. Alien.
Right. I think what they do is they start to try to paint a mosaic and put a composite together of who this guy is. So they'll do right-wing MAGA guy. And then it turns out he lives in a microbus and he's a nudist and smokes weed all day. And I'm like, that doesn't sound like the guys who stormed the Capitol to me. So now I'm already suspicious because you're taking a guy and you're converting him into something he isn't. So now I got one eyebrow raised.
The abstract painting.
Right.
Out of
and now
right.
you don't. Yeah, you're going Salvador Dali on this hippie. And so now I'm getting into it. I'm going around. And then I see the tape, and it's like, no, that's as advertised. That's what you guys said. And it all had a context. You know, well, why was he in his underwear? I sleep in my underwear.
Right.
Why was he holding the drink? I probably have a drink on my nightstand that I would be drinking. And I don't know what he was holding, by the way. I mean, he's probably drinking
I've seen reports that there was ice in it. That's what everyone on a certain side is clinging to.
If there's ice in it, that's interesting, I will say. But maybe
is it
Gary with the last minute?
I gotta go around the park
Molotov
again.
Conspiracy cocktail.
I follow every side of Twitter. I'm just reporting what.
Well, I don't know what kind of wife Nancy Pelosi is, but I always said the fakest part about the sitcom Bewitched growing up. You probably experienced this. Not her being a witch, wasn't Dr. Bombay, wasn't Tabitha moving her nose and blinking in the Sultan, you know, it wasn't anything. It's when Darren would come home from work at 5:30, he'd drop his briefcase, he'd walk right up to the bar, open the ice bucket, and it was filled with ice. That was the phoniest part. Anyone who's been married knows that is the most fantastical part of the show Bewitched. That's the only part I didn't buy. Now, maybe Nancy's great and had a full ice bucket.
You never know. They could have an ice machine that's right next to the bed. I would like an ice machine and a refrigerator next
to
the bed.
So I feel like everything comported with what this story was. Unless there's some other lap we have to take around Conspiracy Park, I am satisfied with this. And I would argue, whether you're Alec Baldwin's publicist or you're Nancy Pelosi's publicist, do not give the interview and do not try to block the body cam stuff if there's nothing on it.
Yeah. Well, I did also say... I didn't understand what was being reported if the defense did not want it out. That's what I didn't get. I don't get why the defense did not want it out.
Yes, because he attacks him with a hammer.
He attacks him with a hammer. Also, the other one where he's banging away like he's Yosemite Sam on the back door.
Yeah. All right. You can go to AdamCarolla.com. Live shows all over the place. West Palm Beach coming up. Doing stand up there February 16th, and then Baltimore and Raleigh and Naples, and oh boy, we're all over the place. So go there and go to AdamCarolla.com, find out when I'm coming to a city near you. Mark,
Dirty Taco if you're in GCT, Prova Pizza, Love Pizza in Times Square, Edge Company 28 downtown, and Teddy Mediterranean Tapas downtown.
So till next time, Adam Carolla. For Mark, hard out. Soft taco, Garrigo, say it. Mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Stay tuned for more bonus episodes coming soon.